All right, everyone. Not even a need for a little bit of a break. I'm just going to go right into the show with Isaac Witham. Are you still there, Isaac?
I am.
Okay.
I was just listening to all the various perspectives and the various personalities of the seemingly never-ending struggle over the natural resources of the Eurasian geopolitical theater.
Well, Stephen has really been heralded as more or less alternative for a long, long time. He hasn't held the mainstream view of news, and he hasn't held the mainstream agenda. He gets criticized by the big boys a lot for not towing the party line.
Well, you know, I don't know at all. And I mean, I don't even know a fraction of what I guess should be known. But I can tell you that from many decades of paying attention, it always seems to be focused on either oil or gas or precious metals or rare earth materials or strategic alliances to protect all of the above. My suspicions with the creation of the modern state, if you will, of Israel, for instance. It's now nearly 70 years old, 47, 53, 15. Yeah, we're talking about 68 years,
yeah,
right? Since the re-establishment.
Not very far away from 70, exactly.
But it came right in the post-war period of the Second World War, where the Panzer divisions of Rommel, I mean, literally drove right across the sands to North Africa looking for fuel for the Panzers and the Luftwaffe. And the petroleum interests of the British Crown, immediately after the cessation of the Second World War, by golly, we recreated a kingdom that hadn't been in existence in 1,500 years. Plus, you know, and I have to say that I believe that the establishment of the modern state of so-called Israel is nothing more than a strategic positioning, sort of like the Romans did with their colonists. They'd establish contingents of Roman soldiers to defend the boundaries of the Roman Empire. I'm kind of thinking the modern state of Israel is nothing more than a sham.
Well, allegedly, well, I also wanted to say for people that might know you as a different name, they also might know you as Judson Witham.
Correct.
I don't even know if you still use that Facebook profile or not, do you?
Yes, I the reason I have more than one is that I've got obvious set of shills and trolls around, and they file these erroneous and bogus complaints and get my Facebook shut down regularly.
Oh yes.
So I decided to, you know, if that's the way they want to be dirty about it, well, you've got to stop and understand that in the early part of the 1980s, nobody heard of the savings and loan scandal. I mean, everybody was in the dark. And they didn't even realize that it had been going on since the 1960s. It didn't just happen in, 82, 83, 84, and then things collapsed. It was ongoing since the 1960s and all through the 70s, where the banking sector was being robbed with real estate swindles.
Sure.
They even went so far as to call it the savings and loan debacle, but what it really was is the banks were robbed for far more money exclusively in the real estate sector. And now again, here 25, 30 years later, the national banking system, as your earlier guest, his name was Stephen, correct?
Stephen Ledman, yes.
Yeah, he was readily agreeable to the vast looting of the economic machine when we discuss the bailouts and this vast real estate-based swindling of the nation yet again. I have to say, simply, the vast, massive looting of this nation using real estate as a modus operandi has been going on since the 1800s and even before. And again, you know, we're talking about real estate, both here in the United States being employed to rob the citizenry. And then when you speak of Israel, I mean, primarily you're speaking about a piece of real estate and its value to somebody. I mean, it's not a kingdom. I hope it's not. You know, the kingdom of David, right, in the Bible?
Yes.
It's not a modern kingdom, I don't think. But again, you have to understand, I guess, the motivations of most people. They won't do anything unless there's money involved. If there's no money to be made, they'll go do something else.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I believe it is attributed to Jesus once said that the love of money is the root of all evil, or maybe it was the Bible. I'm not much of a scholar, yeah, one or the other, but you know, it's not so much. I know it's falsely said that money is the root of all evil, but it's not so much the money itself. It's what people do to attain the money, or you know, what they do with it is the problem.
Well, everything that your previous guest, Stephen, was discussing about the struggles between the former Soviet states and the struggles between Washington and Putin and the struggles between the Israelis and all their neighbors and the alliances with Bandar Bush. I mean, he even brought Bandar Bush into the discussion from Saudi Arabia and their secret alliances with Israel. The whole thing that I find quite sickening, I almost said amusing, but it's not amusing, it's sickening. It's absolutely diabolical. I can't find harsh enough words to describe it. But it's all about greed. Greed, control, and power over vast stretches of real estate. I've written it's messy. So don't, you know, be shocked when you open it up and wow, this is all over the board, sir. There's an investigative piece I've been working on with the hope someday of editing it and making more sense out of it and putting it in better chronological order. But its title is The Adirondacks Conspiracy. And it goes back 400 or 500 years to the days of King James of the Holy Bible. And he woke up one morning outside of London in one of the palaces, and he decided that all of North America, Central America, and South America belonged to the English crown. He just decided it. I mean, God apparently came to him in his bedroom like Joe Smith, you know, and told him that you have dominion over this entire landmass from the North Pole to the South Pole, which is kind of comical if you stop and think about it. But again, we're focusing on real estate, aren't we? The grabbing up of large, vast areas of real estate. Now, I've explained it to some people in this fashion. If you're going to have crown jewels in a vast treasury full of gold and silver and all the other precious metals and gems that the earth has in store for, you know, the monarchy, you're going to have to get it out of the ground. This stuff all comes out of the ground. Just like oil and gas and uranium for nuclear power and the thorium and all the other rare earth materials that are used in some of the more advanced nuclear power systems. All of it comes out of the ground. So basically, most of the planetary wealth is mined from the earth.
Yes, it is. I've got to add something to you, Judson, not to interrupt you, but you know, there was a time in human history's past that people believed that unless you made something, you did not own it. And then these people that you are probably referring to, these brainwashed oligarchical families, somehow told themselves that they were better and more elite, had better blood, if you want to think of it that way, or special blood, special bloodlines, and they somehow convinced themselves that they were better than the rest of us.
I think this goes a lot to religious dogma and doctrine. I think it goes a lot to just unmitigated greed and arrogance. I think, and I know there's people that would burn me at the stake as a heretic, but I find a lot of the world's religions to be just very arrogant and enabling of certain leaders of the religious sects, i.e. I speak for God. Like, I don't know, let's pick on King James for a second and his dominion over all of the Americas. I mean, what the hell? I mean, it's just that simple. He wakes up one morning and he just decides that territory that has existed since the beginning of time just automatically belongs to Britain. Based on what exactly? His decree, right? His fiat. Lex Rex, right? The king is the law.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
The compilations of the prerogatives of the king, primarily undertaken by Sir Matthew Hale in the 15 and 1600s, is a good example. Essentially, whatever the king, the anointed one, decided was what was acceptable. Sort of like, you know, the same thing, you know, whatever Adolf Hitler decided was the correct way to approach things, made it certainly legal, at least in the eyes of the Third Reich, right?
Yes.
Or the Khmer Rouge, or, I don't know, Benito Mussolini's regime, or Pinochet, or, I mean, we can go on all day long naming, you know, thugs, despots, and dictators, right?
Well, you know, looking back at some of these thugs and dictators you're talking about, a lot of the elite families that control the money in a country seem to look towards psychopaths and sociopaths for their leaderships.
Well, the Adirondacks conspiracy is kind of a mishmash, if you will, of different financial interests that literally invaded and established the British colonies, worked the British colonies with slaves. Lots of children from Ireland, Scotland, and England were thrown aboard ships and brought to the country with the quaint little phrase, indentured servants. But there was enormous numbers of these children that were without indentures. They were slaves, literally, brought across the Atlantic to work the plantations of the new colonies. As you see the expansion of the European people, the white people, across all of the Americas, in approximately 200 years, 185 years, they took over the entire landmass from people who lived here since the beginning of time. And the only reason they were able to accomplish that was the planners and the military strategists that were employed by the British Crown and the French Crown and the Spanish Crown.
And the media of the day.
The Netherlands. These royal families, they had an agenda.
And the media of the day also, Isaac.
Well, the media of the day, and then one of the biggest weaknesses, I suppose, that the indigenous populations had was their immune systems were not ready for the disease that the Europeans brought.
Well, certainly.
It wiped out millions of them.
Oh, yes, tens of millions, and reportedly even up to an excess of 100 million. But, you know, these people that you're referring to, the indigenous Indians of North America, there never would have been any wars with the white English or the white Europeans and the Indians if they hadn't been branded as savages or just some of the other adjectives that were used in the day.
Well, I believe that to be astutely accurate in and what is discussed about these moments in history today. I think the responsible thing to say is that in some regard, the very primitive ways of the aboriginals of this continent did lend themselves to intertribal warring, intertribal slaving. There were some horrible atrocities and extremely backward mannerisms of quite a large number of Native Americans.
Absolutely, but
lent themselves to their defeat.
Right, but do you know why that was, though? That,
you know, not having cannons was one thing. Not having horses was another.
Yes.
They didn't really, you know, in the earlier times, they didn't have gunpowder. So they were militarily conquered.
Well, they were also introduced to greed. There was a time way back in the early part of the Western colonization that there was no term, or there was no Indian term for the word buy or sell. I think there's a story out there that there was a pilgrim that finally learned to converse with an Indian chief, and he asked where the place to buy and sell things were, and the Indian chief said, we don't have a word for buy or sell. We trade and we barter, but buying and selling gives the connotation that something is worth more than something else is.
Well, I have to kind of lay this foundational matter of fact down. I was raised on the east side of Lac du Saint-Sacrement, or what's known today as Lake George, New York. The area is extremely rich in colonial history, quite obviously. Films such as Last of the Mohegans, a lot of James Fenimore Cooper's work was done in the area where I grew up. I grew up not far from Fort William Henry, Fort Ticonderoga, Fort Edward, Fort Ann, north of the battlefield at Saratoga. So I was immersed as a kid in the colonial era history. As an adult, I'm working currently with Dr. Richard Hayes Phillips, who's just returned from the British Isles. He traveled to Ireland, Scotland, and England yet again to retrieve the original records of the ships and the ports and the ship owners and the financiers and the names, the birth records, and the family ancestral records of thousands of children that were kidnapped.
Yeah.
And to the colonies. Yeah, Dr. Phillips is one of the most fascinating minds, so hopefully you'll get him on your show someday.
That would be nice. But
he can describe to the world how the British royals, the French royals, Spanish royals, the royals of the Netherlands and Holland, how they targeted this part of the world for its natural resources wealth.
Yes.
Now, I want to just kind of focus very keenly, like a laser beam.
I just want to warn you, we only got about a minute till the break, though, Isaac.
Okay. I'll pick it up after the break, okay?
Okay. But yeah, we just have about a minute left. Who'd you say this doctor or a professor was?
His name is Dr. Richard Hayes Phillips. He's quite an accomplished geomorphologist. He's an educator. He's an extremely well-educated individual. But I guess the most important thing that I want to say is the Rothschild Natural Resources Corporation. The American landmass was targeted by the British for its natural resources, and I believe that's the exact same reason that Israel exists today.
Certainly. And there's the music, Isaac. We are at the break, so we can concentrate on this after, if you would like. We will see everyone in...
Is your show over for the day?
No. We have another hour to go. We'll be right back in about 7 minutes, everyone. All right, and welcome back after the break there. I know I might have had a little bit of trouble reaching Isaac while the music was going there, but I'm glad you stuck on for the break there, Isaac. I wanted to mention to everybody that we are listener supported, so if you like what we're doing here, please go hit that donate button and help out with the finances. So we're going to continue on with some of the history of I think your region where you're originally from, Isaac.
I was raised in the area to the north of Saratoga, up to Lake George, and in the general region over into New Hampshire and Vermont. And my family's people, on my father's side, arrived in 1628, just north of Boston at Gloucester. So the family, my family, is as old world American, I guess, as you can get. The thing that I've been working on, just as a, I don't know, I don't profess to be any sort of an expert. I'm maybe a little more politically inclined than some people, but I'm trying to understand this vast mess that plagues our planet with war and these oligarchs and these Illuminatus and these bankster gangsters and all these political power junkies, and from you know, the queen and the kings to Putin and the Chinese people's whatever they call their governmental system. But I think it all boils down to money. If there wasn't any money in what they do, they'd go do something else. I found that the Rothschild Natural Resources Corporation, I find that to be quite an interesting group in that they've operated on this continent for so long, which goes back to the Adirondack conspiracy that I was talking about earlier. You see, before the crowned heads of Europe and Britain, before they traveled across the Atlantic in their boats, they had to sit down and actually decide to cut down the trees and then have them sawed up into the boards to build the ships, I mean, long before they came. In other words, they planned to come here, and the reason they came wasn't for a latte and a donut. They came to exploit the land. It was an economic undertaking that was decided long before the first boat set sail.
There weren't any Starbucks around back then, huh? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, the whole reason for coming, the entire reason for coming in the first place, was to exploit the natural resources.
Well, you know, I've heard it said that the powerful elites, they don't really care about money anymore. They care more about control. They've got the money making machines at their fingertips, Isaac. They don't really care about money, but they do care that we care about money.
You notice that the bailouts, for instance, were to cover the vast losses of the real estate developments. I actually have a site that's called Toxic Zombie Developments. You can look it up on the net, and it's a very exhaustive expose on the vast speculative real estate developments that got renamed Toxic Assets. In other words, TARP, the Toxic Asset Recovery Program. All that was to bail out their vastly failed speculative real estate gambling.
Well, yeah, that's all it was gambling.
And, you know, it took me a while to catch on that they had, you know, changed the vernacular and used different terminology. And I'm absolutely convinced they changed the words to conceal further what it is they've been doing since the 1800s. And that's engaging in wildly unregulated real estate speculation.
Sure, sure.
If you look at the many trillions that are missing at this very minute, and anybody that's been paying any attention at all knows that trillions went up in smoke in these real estate schemes.
They did.
So again, we're talking again about real estate. everything is about real estate, from the geopolitical control in the Ukraine to the establishment of Israel to every major national interest in the world. It's all about controlling the land and what the land provides in the form of riches.
Yes, and you can only control the land when you control the people.
And, you know, control the military industrial machine and the military financial machine and all these other mechanisms which are employed to force huge numbers of people, basically everyone in the world, into conditions of bondage and servitude.
Absolutely. I guess I'll give out the Skype number in case anybody would like to call in and ask a question or has anything else to add. I believe that's Studio A's. I hope it's going to be Studio A's Skype. That would be 347-688-2902. They can join the conversation or just ask a question if you'd like. Or there are some listeners that do have my Skype, and they can come in and join us if they would like. But if somebody would like to join the discussion on Skype, they can hit me up at Stephen, stephen.c.roberts1. That's my Skype. Or call in on the studio Skype, Studio A. We, you know, there has to be a revolution of thinking in the people's minds here in America and the people of the world before there can be any kind of a change, Isaac.
Well, you know, as we spoke about setting up this program, and we texted and kind of back and forth on that chat room there, or chat box, excuse me, on Facebook, I described to you the reopening of the school on the North Road. Extremely, extremely historic and important piece of real estate between South Bay on Lake Champlain and Fort Ticonderoga. There's a military road called the North Road. It's one of the most historically important pieces of real estate in American history. And along that North Road, there's an old Quaker schoolhouse that Dr. Phillips actually owns on 26 acres. We have been working in the direction of and consummating here very shortly this next year the reopening of that school. In the middle of the Adirondack Park Preserve, in one of the most beautiful pieces of real estate on this continent, actually. It overlooks to the west all of the Adirondack Mountain Range, and to the east it overlooks Lake Champlain and the Green Mountains of Vermont. The ancestral tribal homeland of the Abenaki, the Mohegan, the Mohican, the Iroquois. The historic importance of this place where this school sits, Dr. Phillips has enough reverence for humanity, and a lot of his friends, including me, we've been lifelong friends, Stephen. The purposing of the land is being put in an educational foundation and in trust to the expansion of the intelligentsia that will eventually break this insane cycle of greed and war and more greed and more war and struggle and power mongering and, I don't know, carrying on like the oligarchs and the Illuminatists that have brought the planet to the dismal state that it is in this afternoon.
Absolutely, Isaac. I've said this on air quite a few times and most of my networks that I'm on, but you know, there has to be something wrong with one's brain, whether it's some kind of a retardation or whether it's brainwashing or whether it's something else, that these elite oligarchs, they actually do believe that they are better than a lot of other people. And I think there has to be something wrong with their brains, to tell you the truth.
You know, I was, and I've been doing this a lot lately, so I'm going to do it on your show, and this will prove to an awful lot of people that I think way beyond the outside of the box.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look up into the night sky and you see the stars and the moon and some of the planets. But the largest thing, or I should say the largest nothing in the night sky, is all the darkness in between the stars. And, you know, it's pretty obvious that the largest commodity, I guess, in all of the existence of the cosmos is a whole lot of empty space, right?
Yes.
Now, I know it doesn't get any simpler than nothing, does it?
It would seem not.
Damn simple. Nothing's pretty simple, isn't it?
It would seem not.
Well, you know, I've been a Baptist minister over 30 years now, and I'm kind of a spiritual creature. I think I'm fairly well educated. I'm not going to profess to be the smartest tool in the shed, but I'm not stupid by any means. But I kind of have this understanding about all this nothing, you know, and there's an enormous amount of it. I think there's more nothing than there is anything else, you see.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you have the answer to explain to all of humanity where all that nothing originated, I mean, where did it come from?
Right.
And the answer is nobody really knows for sure, right?
Right.
But I doubt it came from a Big Bang. I mean, what the hell was there before the Big Bang, right? And how did all this room and space get here? The Bang created the space? That doesn't even make sense from quantum physics, that the giant explosion created the space, because the space would have had to have been there first in order for the giant explosion materials. I mean, where'd the giant explosion materials come from? And I mean, we can get deep, deep, deep into this rabbit hole of, I don't know, creationism?
Yes.
My point being is there's all these people running around this little blue planet called Earth, and they can't even explain the nothing. But then they're going to run around and tell everybody about the Creator. They want to run around and be spokesmen for God, who created it all.
Right.
At least in some people's minds. There's a lot of people that would argue with me that there is no God, and I have to give them their, you know, appropriate amount of time to express, you know, their perspectives on their views of this cosmos that we live in. Now, to bring it back to Earth, without sounding too crazy or like I'm wearing a tinfoil hat, because I don't own any tinfoil hats, we have this systemic struggle and power mongering and warring and thieving and carrying on like a bunch of spoiled, rotten brat children going on this planet that's causing enormous amounts of suffering and death. And I think you get to a certain point as a species, you know, humanity collectively, that this BS has got to stop. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It does. It does.
I mean, how much longer will human beings tolerate all this nonsense?
All this malarkey, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, before there comes a point in time where we realize that this is all just a giant-ass scheme making a handful of the industrial...
It is.
What do they call it? The industrial... war-making machine. Who own the infrastructure that are getting filthy rich off of all this?
Well, they are. They are. They absolutely are. You know, get to a talking about a scientific and a physics point, a scientific fact. They found out many years ago that the structure of the atom is 99.97% open space. They can't explain what holds the atom together, Isaac. They haven't been able to explain what holds the atom together. They don't know what makes us not fly apart into some kind of a just spatial
Cosmic, do you understand? Dust.
Yeah, cosmic dust or just plasma.
Precisely.
That's, yeah. Precisely. They don't know what makes concrete or wood hard. They don't know what holds us together. They just can't explain it yet. That's part of the reason why there is theoretical science the way it is. They just don't know everything.
Well, I want to again. He's no stranger to the limelight. I mean, Dr. Phillips, Richard Hayes Phillips. He's one of the more dynamic individuals that I've ever encountered. I know a lot of people. I guess lucked out as a kid. I bought a boat from him. He lived at Pilot Knob on Lake George, and I was a kid, and somehow or another my sister knew his sister, and I wanted one of those little hydroplane boats, and she told me that Dick is his name. Dick had one for sale, so I wound up buying Dick Phillips' boat from him when I was like, I don't know, I might have been 8 or 9 year old kid, and I think he was 12 or 13. And I think the first thing that, you know, really caught my attention about Richard Phillips is he played an incredible 12-string guitar at like 12 years old. He was a protege musician, composer. He's an incredible songwriter and performer. Then he went on and he went back to his more serious academic pursuits and wound up becoming a college professor. He's taught across the world. He's performed around the world. And I guess where I'm going with this whole diatribe on Dr. Richard Hayes Phillips is a couple of country kids who grew up in the ancestral lands of the Abenaki, Native Americans, have acquired enough reverence to it, bit northeast of Hewlett's Landing on Lake George up at Spruce Mountain. The foundation that will come to fruition this year, this summer, is a beginning for this planet to get its shit together.
We can't really say that.
Politicians and bankers, I mean, how much longer will they be given carte blanche?
Yeah, I need to
run around the world creating havoc. Yeah. I mean, it just, it's got to stop somewhere.
Yeah, it does. I wanted to share something with you. Monkey in the chat room there said, how long will humanity accept inhumanity? And that's a very good question. You know, how long will the people that are good going to put up with the people that are bad?
Well, you know, cancel the cabal, right?
Yeah, exactly. It says nothing about kill or destroy or anything like that. We just have to cancel them out.
Well, you know, your previous guest, Stephen, was talking about the so-called mainstream, with who a lot of people are now calling the lamestream,
yeah,
corporate-owned media. Programs like Cancel the Cabal, I see to be kind of the cream of the crop that will eventually rise to the top.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'd like to see that happen. I would.
You got guests like Isaac Judson with them on your program. You can't be too far behind the curve, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're a bit of a full Cairo on Facebook there, aren't you? And YouTube, I should say.
I've pounded the living hell out of these gangster banksters. My story. I grew up on a 600-acre marina. My father was a Navy fighter pilot and an officer in the Pacific Fleet during the Second World War. He was a Navy intelligence officer and a fighter pilot. So my dad was very well educated, and he was a real kind of a man's man. Dad didn't take much grief from anybody, you know. He played football back in the days when they wore those stupid little leather helmets, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was a Colgate man. He played at Colgate. He was raised at the Fulton Institute, which was prep school at Fulton, New York. He was a well-educated man, my father was. He had a photographic memory. But in short, the opportunities that have presented themselves to me to understand real estate development, growing up at that very large marina, Dad had all kinds of friends in the real estate development business. I went into construction at a young age, building waterfront vacation homes. I built quite a few very large restaurants and nightclubs. I went on and I built malls, and I built airports and hospitals and skyscrapers, amongst a lot of other things through the years. And dealt with some of the largest and the largest real estate development interests in the nation, including just one, Tramwell Crow out of Dallas, Texas. Everybody knows who George and Barbara Bush are, right?
I would think, unless they've been living underneath a rock the last 20 plus years.
I built their home at the Houstonian Estates across from Memorial Park, just on the west side of Loop 610 in Houston, Texas. That was the level at which I was operating. I've been around some extremely large real estate development interests in Houston, and long story, I guess, made concise, succinct, and short. The savings and loan and banking scandal of the 1980s was exposed by me. I rose ever loving hell with the feds. I got into it with the Secret Service and the Department of Justice. I got into it with state authorities. I got into it with basically everybody and their brother. Wound up in federal court and several federal judges' courtrooms going after these crooked banksters back in the 80s. And I've learned a lot. And I never stopped, Steve. I didn't quit because I saw they never stopped. For instance, everybody's been following this Union Bank of Scotland and HSBC fiasco, right? And Enron and Stanford Financial, and I can go on all day long naming names, like people such as, his name's evading. I have a little brain freeze here. Phil Graham, there we go.
Okay.
I knew Phil Graham from Conroe, Texas, before Phil Graham was anybody. I say the name Gerald Solomon. Do you know who Gerald Solomon was?
Not offhand. Is he one of the Solomon brothers or something?
Well, he was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee of the United States Congress for about 20 years.
Okay.
He served under several presidents. Gerald Solomon is from Glens Falls, New York. My father got Gerald Solomon elected to his first political office in Queensbury, New York. Alphonse Amato, you know who Senator Alphonse Amato would be.
Yes.
You've probably heard of, like, Bud McFarland.
Sure.
Of the Iran-Contra fiasco. Well, Bud McFarland, I dated Bud McFarland's daughter in junior high school from Glens Falls, New York. Robert Owens of the Iran-Contra parade or circus, I'll call him a circus. I used to be very good friends with his brother John Owens, they own the Glens Falls National Bank. And I can just drop names all day long of the people that I've encountered in my Forrest Gump-like life. How I wound up being Isaac Judson Witham, I don't know if it's a curse or if it's some kind of a blessing, I don't know. But I can tell you this. Shutting down these gangster banksters and getting right up close and personal and in their faces, I've spent over 30 years doing it. And am I proud of my accomplishments? And my answer to that is absolutely yes, I am. Somebody had to get in their face, along with a lot of other people. It wasn't just me, but you know who Bill Black is, right?
Yes.
Well, Professor William Black, University of Kansas City, Missouri, part of the investigative reporters and editors group at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, the IRE. Bill Black has a Facebook site. And, you know, we're talking a pretty well educated and very informed individual in this banking fiasco, correct? Bill Black is top shelf, right?
Oh, yes.
Well, everything that I post to Bill Black's Facebook site, you know, Professor Black leaves it there. He doesn't erase it because he knows it's good stuff. I got Bill Black hired. I'm just going to get cut right to the bone here. I wrote so much ever-loving stinking hell in the middle of Enron country down there in Houston. I mean, I rose hell that the savings and loan and banking scandal got exposed. I was working right in downtown, you know, for years. I built most of the banks that were involved. First City, Texas Commerce, Allied Bank, Western Bank, all these, M Bank, I think I may have already mentioned them, Ben Franklin Savings, Bank of the Southwest. I go all day long naming the banks in Houston that were responsible for the massive real estate-based debacle and fiasco of the 1980s. And it's only gotten worse, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
A lot of it's been shut down. I mean, Eric Schneiderman and the Financial Fraud Investigation Task Force and Eric Holder and, you know, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and I can go on all day long naming personalities in media and broadcasting and publishing and in Congress and in the Senate that in the last 6 or 8 years have been addressing the vast corruption in these banking and real estate and mortgage markets. But before they all got involved, there were the whistleblowers, right?
Oh, yes.
I'm one of the original, if not the original, whistleblower. And I don't know if it's a blessing or if it's a curse. I kind of blame my grandmother. She was a Catholic, and oh boy, if you didn't do something right, she'd beat you up. You know, she'd just knock your, she'd hit you with her cane, and I mean, she'd publicly humiliate you if you, you know, didn't straighten up and fly right. So, you know, I don't know, she taught me right from wrong. My father damn sure taught me right from wrong. And then my mother always taught me to stand up for the underdog.
Well, you see, that's part of the problem right there, Isaac. People aren't being taught right from wrong anymore by parents and grandparents. They're being taught what's right and wrong by Hollywood and today's entertainment system.
Don't get me started on all that mess.
The television and the radio took over mom and dad's spot long, long time ago.
Well, again, we're back to the lamestream mainstream media that your previous guest Stephen was lamenting against. He's a journalist and been in it for many years. He sees it. He knows. I've had the pleasure of meeting some pretty interesting people in media through the years, and a lot of which work for the corporate gangster banksters that did everything they could to discredit me and shut me up. They weren't particularly happy with me blowing the whistle on this massive, unprecedented in human history, looting of the international financial systems. It's not just here in the United States. It's from Greece to Ireland to Japan, all over Iceland, England, France, Australia, the whole world's banking system. If you look into it, you'll find that these real estate speculation cons, they're all over the world.
Yes, they are.
They're nearly universal.
Yeah. There's been an estimated, I think there's been number thrown out there that the looting and the money that's missing is probably in the 1.5 quadrillion area of money.
It's just absolutely mind. I have an answer for it, you know, and it literally mirrors what they did in Iceland. They declared all this mess to be odious debt, and they laid it at the criminals' feet in the banking sector and said, you know, you created this damn mess. The people, the citizenry, are not going to pay for it.
That's right.
It's odious.
That's right.
Created. You see, when you create a contract that is violative of the civil and criminal laws and violates what's known as public policy, those contracts are illegal and they're void ab initio. They have no legal effect because they're illegal contracts. Most of this debt, most of this looting, most of this just hemorrhaging of vast sums of money from the financial system has been caused by not just civil fraud and civil fraud conspiracies, i.e. RICO violations, but the massive amounts of it have been just flat out criminal. I don't believe the American people are on the hook for it, not for one second. And I think eventually you'll find that will become a very popular theme as we're getting closer and closer and nearer to that tipping point economically where this thing could crash, and most likely will crash. There's going to be enormous numbers of people that are going to have to make a decision. Are we going to labor and sweat our lives away to pay off this massive debt, or are we going to declare it to have been illegally created and cast it off as odious?
Well, you know, that's the problem. Slavery wasn't abolished in the, you know, the middle of the 19th century. They just reverted or converted everyone over into a virtual slavery, Judson. You know, it's going to be the fact of the matter. If people want to look at themselves and they're going to have to look at the truth, and they're going to have to confront themselves on whether they want to have these virtual bonds or not.
It's a rather scary period in history where you've got entire civilizations under the gun, so to speak, to be responsible for these massive financial losses. I mean, when did we sign up to be the insurance company for the banks? I mean, most Americans, this is just a for instance, and I'm not just singling out the Obamas, but here you've got the president goes to California on a 747, and his wife, she takes another plane and goes to the same place on the same day. And these two planes are about $200,000 just for fuel per hour. So you're burning about $500,000, let's say, an hour. And what's a flight to and from California? 6-7 hours?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so she can go dancing on the Ellen DeGeneres show?
Right, yeah. Or he can, yeah. One or the other.
Where in the hell in the Constitution? Yeah, and you know, you should know. You're the adult here. it's arguable when we come to me. But well, you're the adult, you know. Tell me, where in the Constitution is it written that the First Lady gets this vast expense account and this vast staff and all this money to go globetrotting with?
You know, but that's just a distracting talking point is all that is, though, Judson. That's more or less a political ploy. I mean, not that, you know, there was the fake left here in America that screamed like banshees about George W. Bush blowing all kinds of money, doing all the things that he did. And Bill Clinton before him and
what I'm saying is here is collectively all these pork barrel wasteful, I mean, just. And I don't want to be vulgar, but there's no other way to put it. They're just pissing it in the wind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that the office of the president was originally set up to be the figurehead to greet foreign dignitaries, and that was basically his only job. He was supposed to have said what the American public wanted him to say and do what we wanted him to do.
Well, you know, this last couple of weeks. Just for the record, I was sharp enough and paid attention close enough and wound up owning a 22,000-volume legal collection of the best legal resources that are available to any law firm in the world on American law and on the history of American common law, which goes back to English and British and common law. And I've got an incredible collection on international law and a huge
it actually goes back further than that. Yeah.
Now, suffice it to say, this particular collection is something that I never expected to have. I've been kind of wanting it, but somehow or another, the planets aligned, and by a miracle or two, I wound up owning it. It's here in the house.
Yeah.
The point I'm trying to make here is that I think you can tell from talking to me that I use the King's English fairly well. I understand what the words mean. I've got a fairly good handle. I'm not saying I'm an expert because that would be a stretch, but I've got a fairly good handle on geopolitical circumstances of the day. And I just, you know, it just leaves me absolutely aghast, totally bewildered on how far this nation has allowed its political power structure to run amok. I mean, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
What did you place that figure at? Several quadrillion?
1.5 to 2 quadrillion is the alleged number out there. Yes. You know,
now, how does this get paid back again?
You know, it probably doesn't. That's a black hole of a number, Judson. And actually, that's two words that I hadn't heard in almost 34 years since 12th grade algebra was the word trillions and quadrillions. And, you know, they've been thrown around like little trinkets of candy in the last 6 years.
Well, I can give you the dirty truth of it. These people intend to squeeze it out of the working class an
sure.
hour at a time.
Yes, they do.
Paycheck to paycheck.
Yes, they
from,
do.
You know, tax deduction to tax deduction.
Yes.
This is the most out of control, immense enslavement, human farming, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Ever in the entire history of the world.
It is.
And we're watching Michelle shake her ass, pardon my French, on Ellen DeGeneres, and we're supposed to be distracted?
Yeah. And there's also the pictures out there and the allegations that she's a transvestite or some sort of, I don't know what, you know, it doesn't really matter because I don't pay attention to it. It's nothing but distraction.
You got all this black money and gray money and muddy money and blood and money that's flowing into the coffers of Hillary Clinton's presidential pursuits. And then you got John, I call him Johnny Bush, Jeff, you know, John Ellis uh-huh. Bush, Johnny.
Yeah.
I call him Johnny Bush. His whole family and his brothers and his daddy and the whole bunch of them are a bunch of criminals, just like the Clintons.
Oh, yeah.
And we're seriously discussing in this country the Clintons and the Bushes are to continue the dynasty in the White House. And I'm thinking to myself, are the American people on dope?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And what kind of dope? I mean, are we tripping or what here?
Yeah. Exactly.
I know Hillary doesn't like me, and I really don't care. I don't like her a bit. And Johnny Bush, you know, same with him. I didn't vote for either one of them. I didn't vote for Obama. And if they don't like me, well, they can take a very long walk off an extremely short pier. I don't care.
Yep. Exactly.
As far as your program is concerned, cancel the cabal. I talk to Dr. Phillips just about every day. And we've been very serious in discussion on, you know, the initial mission of the Phillips Trust Educational Foundation at Spruce Mountain. And, northeastern sector of the United States, the demographics within Spruce Mountain, you're reaching all the way up into Toronto, Montreal. You're all the way up in Newfoundland, over to Boston. And, we're reaching Raleigh and Nashville with a click of a mouse and the press of a broadcast button. 35, 40 million people. It's a big demographic.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of come at you in the future for some assistance on putting together a roundtable, a consortium of visionary broadcasters, because I know they're out there. I don't know if I want to plug your competition or not, but I've dealt with Republic Broadcasting, Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby out in American Fork, Utah. There's a couple of dynamic folks. They're very good friends with Sheriff Richard Mack and his posse, if you will. And then there's just radio personalities and broadcasters across this nation that I think you'll agree with me pretty quickly that there is a rising up happening in this country.
There is. But, it's very slow, and it's going to be a tedious task, Isaac. They had over 100-year start. And they've had control over 100 years ahead of us. It's going to take time to gain back control.
I've got this sneaking suspicion that we outnumber the hell out of them, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. I mean, we've got the numbers by far. And that being said, I can tell you that I've noticed over the last few days that some of the activist sites on Facebook, you can go back 10 and 12 posts, and then you'll see this URL icon that says older stories.
Yes.
Click on it, and you'll find out that it's disabled. They're systematically wiping out the older posts on a lot of these activist sites.
Yeah.
And it comes at a time when Madam Clinton and the United States State Department's come under huge scrutiny for private email servers and operating in secret from the Clintons' residence.
Yeah, yeah.
During a period of war.
You know what they're also doing, Isaac? They're deleting people's profiles on Facebook that aren't really as active as a lot of other people are. You know, say somebody doesn't post or respond to another post for a few weeks or something like that, their profiles get deleted.
And which brings me to the next point. You see, this Facebook phenomena of Zuckerman and how he rose to such a position of control, I find quite suspicious, actually.
Oh, it is. It is a suspicious story, indeed.
Well, here's a Forrest Gump moment, if you will, in Judd Whitham's life. Sitting at the Reuben Clark Law School at Brigham Young University in Provo back in 2006 or 7, it's been quite a while.
Right.
I was working, and one of the students who happened to be a musician that played down on University Avenue, he kept pestering me. He said, "Turn your computer off. I want to show you something. Come with me. I want to show you something." And I was busy. And I kept telling him, no, I'm too busy. And so finally I gave in. Finally I said, yeah, okay, all right. So I shut the computer up. Now we're in the central library at Brigham Young University in Provo. And as we exit the library and start heading down the hallway, past the large artistic renditions of the Mormon Seers, he keeps looking at me, and his face is kind of whitish. I mean, this kid's scared. He said, don't say anything at all when we go down there. Don't say nothing. And so I said, yeah, no problem. I won't say a word, which I didn't. But we went down four stories beneath the main library in the sub-basement of the Brigham Young University Central Library. And we went into four very large computer labs. Probably as many as 150 students working at these giant flat screen monitors, almost like a Johnson control center.
Right.
Almost like an Electrona data system, an EDS control system like Ross Perot built in Houston. We went to the fourth computer lab and we came out. And I didn't say a word, but as we were coming back up the stairwells, I looked at this kid and I said, "What was going on down there?" He says, "They're spying on everybody." And so, I looked at him. This is 2006, 2007.
Social media.
I was familiar with the carnivore and the spying programs of the Department of Defense echelon. And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean they're spying on everybody?" He said, "They're spying on everybody in the world."
Yeah. Social media, right?
Well, what he was showing me was the training center for the Bluffdale NSA Spy Center in Bluffdale, Utah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's all built by the Mormons. Not too far from Fort Williams and from Hill Air Force Base and Dugway Proving Ground out there on I-80 just to the west of Salt Lake City. You know, and it took several months for that experience in my life to sink in. But what that kid showed me is far, far, far more of an expose on this eavesdropping into the world's computer system than Snowden or Julian Assange ever dreamt of releasing to the world.
Right. Or the NSA, yeah.
Well, Snowden didn't expose Echelon. Snowden didn't expose Carnivore. And Julian Assange, I was dealing with WikiLeaks when they were born.
Right.
And WikiLeaks and people like Alex Jones, you know, they wouldn't help me at all. They absolutely turned their back on me blowing the whistle on the gangster banksters back in the 80s. You know who Mike Moore is, right?
Michael Moore, yes.
Yeah, Mike Moore, I was talking with him one day, and I was trying to, you know, expose the financial coup d'etat that was going on in the nation, and he actually told me that he wasn't interested in helping a bunch of deadbeats that weren't paying their mortgages.
Yeah. Yeah.
From Mike Moore, the big Democrat, right?
Yeah.
But suffice it to say, Alex Jones wouldn't lift a finger, and he was out in Austin, Texas.
Right.
At that time, he was kind of new on the scene, and it was the early days of the internet, and he wouldn't lift a finger.
Yeah.
So I worked on and published what's called the Great Texas Bank Job, which immediately got attacked. I mean, viruses, and the site would get canceled, and they'd take it off the net. I had to republish it about 24 times, And it still got all messed up and attacked and erased from the internet. And when I tell people about this 25, 30 years ago, they'd tell me I was nuts,
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can't have a conspiracy this big. Well, my answer today to most of them is how many trillions are missing now?
Yes.
So we knew something, didn't we?
Yeah. How many do they actually admit to? That's one of the key things there, Isaac.
I don't know how much time is left in your show, but we got to be getting close to the end.
I got about 5 minutes left.
I want to plant this in your cranium. I want you to give very serious thought to bringing together a consortium of the broadcasters in this country that actually get it.
Yeah.
That are actually motivated enough to intervene and say, big corporate media, we outnumber you, and we've got a bigger following. Most people aren't watching the lamestream news anymore. They're getting all their information from social media.
Yeah, yeah.
People aren't turning their TVs on like they used to.
Yeah. I think
we've got a real opportunity at hand here to turn things around.
Yeah, I do. I do too. Dustin, I was talking to a friend about 2 weeks back on Skype. She's a radio host on a different network. I'm not going to mention her name or anything, but, she was being lied to by the owner of the network she was on one time, and she ended up leaving that network and going out on her own. And, this owner of the network told her she had 1.5 million listeners. And she just knew it wasn't true because her Facebook and her YouTube wasn't expanding. And she ended up leaving. But I told her if she, in fact, did have that many listeners, she would probably be dead already. And that is probably true with a lot of us. If we start making such an impact to where we do reach millions, they just won't put up with that.
Well, here's something that you'll sleep better at night. You ever see that film series with Jason Bourne?
Oh, yes.
Bourne Identity. So.
Yes.
Well, my family, I've got a little military of my own, sort of 82nd Airborne, 101st Air Force Military Police. I've got Navy SEALs. I've got probably one of, if not the most lethally trained Marine that's ever come out of the U.S. Marine Corps. My first cousin, actually, and I've got his sister's. She's an operative. I'm not going to say anything on air. That wouldn't be fair. Wouldn't be very safe for her either. But she's got her finger right on the pulse of the Middle East. She's in theater. Let me put it to you that way. My father was very good friends with Admiral Charles Adamson. Admiral Charles Tall. You remember when George Bush Jr. responded to the 9/11 attacks? There was a brigadier general with the Air Force that ran all of the military assets in the entire world for the president. His name was Buck Rogers. He attended high school at Sparta, Missouri. And General Rogers' father, Fletcher, and I are very good friends.
Uh-huh. Quickly, Isaac.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say here is that there's an enormous number.
Whoops. Ah, okay. Let me try to get him back quick. Something happened there. I think he might have hit the hang-up button. I think he might have hit the wrong button by mistake. Hi.
They cut me off?
I don't know. Something cut you off. I heard a beep and you was gone.
I'm sure they did. NSA's over there falling out of their chairs. But that's okay. They better pay attention.
Yeah.
My dad, his radio call sign in the Navy was Swamp Fox. And, you know, when the Japanese were all over you and you were fixing to die, they'd get on the radio and they'd be begging my father to get them off them.
Yeah.
And my dad sent a lot of pilots home. I guess the best way for me to say this is my father was a very, very well-connected man. And I've made a lot of friends over the years busting up this banking mess. I've made a friend out of you, I think.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in broadcasting that they know the name Isaac Judson. And, you know, I've made 300 YouTubes. And I've got copious. Go ahead and run my name through a search engine, you know, and you'll say, Jesus, this guy's the New York Times. And the San Francisco Examiner, and I can go on all day long with, you know, Orlando Sentinel to the Chicago Tribune. I mean, I am all over the net. They'll never erase me.
Right.
And if they kill me, it'll be the biggest damn mistake they ever made in their life because I have an estate plan, you see.
Yeah.
You know, a very lucrative estate plan. If I wind up dead, there'll be so much money to print my memoirs, and there'll be a lot of questions asked.
Sure. It'll validate.
I'll still be dead, right?
Yeah.
And my answer to the American people and to the world is quite simply this, you know? I have but one regret.
What's that, Isaac?
Only one life to give, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And that's the end of the show here, everyone, so I'll see you next week. Thank you, Isaac, for coming on. Thank you for staying on Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. This is Cats Look a Ball. Good night, everyone.